Today on Movie Wallers, we talk about 12 Strong, and we have a bit of a catch-up on the Oscars. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hey, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online, streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
No horns.
No yes. Horns. No.
Yay, that was bad. Yazdi's back.
I'm back.
We are all together.
No more honking cars in the background.
It was really funny.
Oh, God.
Was
it really like so that? Many hits like that. I grew up like that.
The whole time. Day and night.
Is it worse?
You just learn to block it out. No, it's not worse. It's been like that for the last 15, 20 years, I'd say.
You must be able to sleep through a thunderstorm. I mean.
Yeah.
I bet weird noises wake you up.
No.
See, because bullfrogs wake me up. I grew up in busy London.
Right.
And can sleep through traffic. I can sleep on top of the...
Fire engines.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but damn bullfrogs or like croaking frogs or birds in the morning.
Well, if...
Wake me up.
Yeah, because if you're in a very quiet environment, then every little thing will wake you up. But if the noise is drowned out, then you're blissfully in slumber.
Well, that's a very logical explanation. But for me, I'm... Gonna call Rashmi a town mouse to my country mouse because
I love that.
She really, I remember like back in New Jersey when we lived in New Jersey and it was in a suburban neighborhood and it was pin drop quiet at night, then it would be like this ribbit, ribbit,
and it would wake me up.
And she'd be like, I can't sleep, I kind of know the noise, I can't cope with it. And it was like, it's a frog. and then came summertime and the crickets came and then she's like, I can't take this noise.
It drives me insane.
Meanwhile, we go to downtown Chicago, fire engines, police, gunshots.
On top of the loop.
Yelling, homeless people.
Because that's comforting. It's good to know you're in the midst of humanity for me.
See, I'm a town mouse. That stuff kept me...
No, you're a country mouse.
We were we were right in the downtown loop as well.
We were going by.
Rashmi was like, she'd taken 10 Ambien. I was like, I can't sleep. Well, welcome back. It's really nice to have you back.
Likewise. I'm so happy to be
on the show.
Yes.
Here. And you just had mango cake.
Oh, it was so
delicious.
Good.
And Rashmi's endlessly hot tea.
From my Ember cup.
Yes.
We are not sponsored by Ember, but I'm loving my cup. I was explaining to Yazdi that my tea stays hot, and my phone sends me a message telling me that my tea is now ready to drink at the temperature I like, which is 130 degrees.
See, this is one of those presents.
Isn't that boiling?
No,
Fahrenheit. No,
yes, it's delicious.
Yes. If it was Celsius, number one.
My lips would have burnt off.
The cup would need a bigger battery.
But it's lovely because I love to sip my tea and it always goes cold.
So let's just explain to everyone an ember cup
there
is.
You
because
go.
Nobody...
See, look, Joe Tekwala is dying to tell everyone.
This
come on.
Part of the show
Joe,
is brought to is us an... by Ember.
Yeah, yes. What is an ember, Joe?
So it's one of those overpriced mugs that you buy in Starbucks, but I bought it as a pretense that it was a present for you, Rashmi, but really it was a present for me because Rashmi needs to drink her tea at a particular temperature.
130 degrees.
But when one makes a tea, Rashmi doesn't drink the tea. Rashmi
sits on it.
Sits and ignores the tea for 45 minutes and then complains that
it's
said tea
cold, yes.
is
it's not
warm enough.
Right.
Which requires a trip back to the microwave to zap it. So this thing's actually pretty cool.
It's very
working
good.
Well.
It's actually very nice.
I thought
it was a bit gimmicky when you first bought it. Well, actually, this is how it went. Not to bore our listeners. Joe said, would you like a cup of tea? And I said, that would be lovely. And then he left the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's interesting.
Oh, so he didn't fill you in?
No.
Oh.
And I came back an hour later and she was like, I want some tea, damn it. I was like, I'm trying to make it, but they didn't have one. And then anyway nice. Let's get on with our podcast.
Do you get a set of two or do you buy them?
It's only one.
Okay.
And they're very expensive. So
okay.
I will drink my tea lukewarm.
Okay.
Which you like.
Which I like.
Yeah, I'm not too particular about.
Really?
Yeah.
So
it's
nice.
Good, but it's good.
It has to be piping.
See, it's steaming.
It is. I can see the steam.
Love it.
All right. Hold it up.
Okay.
Take a picture of it.
See the little lights look.
Oh, yeah. There's a little light.
All right.
Yes.
Let's get on with our podcast because I think we have plenty to talk about today. We should probably do our movie first, which is 12 Strong. And then we thought, because the 90th Academy Awards and nominations were announced a couple of weeks ago, and we haven't talked about them on the show, and there were plenty of movies that we didn't really get to review that are nominated, and we did see them, but because of the way that, you know, we talked a lot about the end of year release, everything got crammed in, we didn't get to do shows on a lot of this stuff, so we thought we would talk about that.
Yes, we would use it as an opportunity. Yes.
12 Strong, and Yazdi, I think you're going to give us the background on that.
I will. So 12 Strong is a movie which kind of came in under the radar, and it's playing right now. And according to IMDb, it tells the story of the first ever Special Forces team, which was deployed to Afghanistan very soon after 9/11. And under the leadership of a new captain, the team had to learn to work with an Afghan warlord to take down the Taliban. This movie is directed by, I think this director has only made one other movie before. He's not somebody I'm familiar with. His name is Nikolai Fuglsig. Nikolai Fuglsig. And it's written by Ted Talley, Peter Craig, and Doug Stanton, obviously based on real life incidents. And it has quite a cast, chief among them being Chris Hemsworth. Yes, that Chris Hemsworth. Michael Shannon is here. Michael Pena, who is not quite as celebrated as he should be, is here as well. And then Thad Luckinbill. I like that last name. And then two Austins, Austin Hebert and Austin Stovall are here. And then finally, the only other familiar name is William Fichtner. So this is a movie based on real life events. Those are hard to do. Tell me, Rashmi, is it rah-rah patriotic or is it the real stuff?
So it feels very much like a January movie. In the sense of, you know, it's not bad. It's just not very good. And it is slightly jingoistic, but I think it deserves to be because of the subject matter. I think for me, the trouble I'm having with it is it's just too soon. I'm not ready to watch a movie about this yet.
This being the 9/11 story.
Yeah, this being based on the 12 men who, like you said, Yazdi, you know, were the first who were sent out to Afghanistan to try and avenge the terrible incident that happened in New York. So having said that, look, it's not a bad movie. It's pretty entertaining in the moment. It's just not anything different or anything great. I did feel somewhat educated because I wasn't aware of how the conflict unfolded in Afghanistan and how the warlords all worked together and some of those intricacies. And I think the main theme that came across to me was the sense of duty that these people, that these soldiers, these heroes have to their unit and their work versus their duty to their family in that conflict.
Joe?
So, you know, I loved the premise of this movie. I think this is a really interesting story. You know, it really failed, I think, to capitalize on one of the central themes to me, which was the anger we all felt post 9/11, right? The terrorist incident occurred, we had the terrible loss of life, and we all felt angry and somewhat vengeful. And I think this movie starts to go there in terms of, you know, everyone to immediately do their patriotic duty. And I just feel that they missed an opportunity to really explore the emotion of the country at the time. And so I was kind of excited as the movie opened up because I felt that we were going to get some of that. But it ends up being just kind of another run-of-the-mill type, you know, Special Forces movie. And I don't think we should, you know, have these jingoistic, trivial movies about these remarkable individuals that go into such danger on our behalf. And you end up with a movie that's, you know, got a bit of like a, you know, it reminds me of that movie that we saw a few years ago, Act of Valor. Yes. Do you remember that? The kind of the SAS movie.
It was last year.
No, that was a few years ago.
Mark Wahlberg
but we had the 13 Hours
about.
As well. Oh, 13 the Hours, Benghazi yes. movie, yes. Lone Survivor, the Mark Wahlberg movie. It reminds me of one of those movies. It's, you know, it's competently done. You know, it's not a snoozer. I think the battle scenes, you know, the men are just, you know, badass. Yeah, you know, all American boys. And I think that kind of stuff is a little bit lightweight, I think, for the reality of what these guys are like. Unless they're all like frat boys and, you know, they go into war with like a year and a back slap and a, you know, let's go kick some terrorist. But, you know, I just felt it was a little bit too much light of tone. You know, some good, well-shot battle scenes. I think they were well done. But this story seems remarkable because I did research it afterwards. Like you, Rashmi, I didn't know the specifics of this right. and how 12 men on horseback went into
right.
Afghanistan.
They went on horseback into
Taliban land, you know, essentially, you know, making allies of people that they didn't know who would be, you know, an ally or not. And with a very low probability of really succeeding in their mission. I mean, this was a very difficult thing that we had to do, and the world was so sensitized that the premise here is superb. We just get a mediocre movie to tell that story, and I think that's too bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say this isn't necessarily a rush out and see unless you like this particular genre. I think I'm just, again, just not ready to watch a movie about an event that had so much weight to it that it, again, the movie feels weightless.
But I don't think this movie's about 9/11 per se. I mean,
Question. Does it have scenes off 9/11? Or
just at the very beginning, okay. where, you know, the towers are burning and people yeah. are gathering around trying to piece together what's happening.
Okay.
You know,
it didn't really talk about Al-Qaeda or, you know, bin Laden or the process of finding, pinpointing how they figured out who was involved. It doesn't have any of that. I mean, it literally is 12 American
story.
Heroes who go on horseback.
It's the soldier story, but again, yeah. I feel like it's you know, it's the clean cut, you know, American
yes.
guys with the, you know, blonde wives and the, you know, the baby child, that all kind of, you know, the all American values, which, look, I get that that's the portrayal of these guys that they want to do, but it just feels very artificial, right? It's got that kind of almost sitcom without the canned laughter
yeah,
feel
that's
to
a
it.
Good
it's
point.
Just you know, it doesn't represent reality in a way. It represents somebody's vision for, you know, their view of America, and I think these guys, what they do is beyond belief, and I feel like we need to get to know them better, other than the kind of artificial super soldier that is always represented in these, you know, with, you know, 1 or 2 day stubble growth and you know, weapons expertise kind of thing. You know, they just feel like cartoon caricatures of who I believe these real heroes are.
Yeah, they're almost cardboard cutouts in a sense that just get put from movie to movie in a sense. It's a great point.
And you can tell by the casting. I mean, Chris Hemsworth, you know, square jaw, you know, good looking lad. I mean, he's not all American, but I mean, he's got that, you know, real, you know,
yeah.
Football player. You know, he you could interchange him with,
he's,
you know,
Thor. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Again, I get that this is the movie they wanted to make. It just feels like a little bit of a missed opportunity for me.
So you think these events deserve a better movie?
For
I
sure.
Do. Yeah.
For sure. When you do even just momentary kind of Wikipedia type reading of the background of the movie, and you understand that they were dropped into enemy territory, you know,
knowing who their friends
were, with zero support at a time when the world was really on fire. I mean, you know, post 9/11, the world was really, everyone was, it was a tinderbox, and what they had to do and how they had to do it and the support that they didn't have is remarkable that they actually accomplished their mission.
And on horseback.
Yeah.
I mean, it is pretty incredible.
Love the story. Didn't like the movie.
So back of the plane movie, if that.
Perfect back of the plane movie.
Yeah. It's not dull. Okay. It's you know, it's certainly not a boring film. It just lacks any real tension, and despite the danger they were in, I never really felt that they were in a lot of danger.
Yeah, not even knowing how it was going to turn out. I didn't feel for them. I wasn't worried for them. And I also...
they were too handsome to be shot.
Well, it wasn't just that. There wasn't emotional heft. There was no heft.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can give you my score. It's 12 strong divided by 2. Solid 6 out of 10.
And I'm going to be a little meaner than that. I'm going to give it a 5. Again, nothing particularly inherently wrong with it, just nothing particularly inherently good about it either.
Yeah.
Very good.
So that's our movie review for the week. January's been kind of a slow month for us. The year always has that kind of inertia to it, so hopefully things will start picking up again.
Yeah, and it's also because all of the stuff that's out in the cinemas is the stuff that we crammed our way through at the beginning of December. So we're kind of having a bit of an easy time because we've pretty much watched most things that are on in every Cineplex.
Yeah. A lot of the Oscar-nominated movies right now are playing in all the theaters. And yeah, we've seen the majority of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we talked about a lot of them on the podcast. I mean, if you look at like our December, November-December podcast list, I think we've talked certainly about a lot of these. Yeah,
and what I've done is as we talk about the awards, I have numbered the episodes. If anyone's interested in listening to the full episodes, I have the numbers. So cool. We'll try and reference those as we go through.
All right, so let's talk about award season. So it's been a pretty good... it's been a pretty busy award season already. We've had the Globes, we've had the SAGs, we've had, I think, the Directors Guild... the Producers Guild, they've all made their nominations, but everyone always focuses on the Academy Awards, and their nominations came out late January, as they do, I think, for an early March.
First week of March.
Ceremony for the Oscars. So we thought maybe we could do a rundown of just a few of the categories. I think we don't want to have this podcast going on for 2 hours and all of us...
Much as we would talk about it all night. Yeah.
So let's see how it goes. We'll do a few categories, are the key ones, and we can always do more in a future show.
There you go. Yeah,
absolutely. So I guess we'll start with the Best Supporting Actor nomination, which this year we have Willem Dafoe for The Florida Project, Woody Harrelson for Three Billboards, which I'm not only going to say once in its full entirety on this podcast. So, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
No, oh my God, Joe, I can't believe you screwed it up.
Again, I know. So, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I'm only going to say it once. It will now be forever known as Three Billboards. Then we have Richard Jenkins for The Shape of Water, Christopher Plummer for All the Money in the World, and Sam Rockwell for Three Billboards. So, any thoughts, any immediate thoughts on who was in the category, who maybe should have been in the category?
Yes. So we had this discussion in episode 378, where we talked at length about Three Billboards and my personal disappointment about the movie. That's not to say it's a terrible movie. It was just disappointing to me, and I've argued with many people about this subsequently who loved the movie, which is great. But I would have substituted both Woody Harrelson and Sam Rockwell. And I know, Joe, you called Sam Rockwell during that episode. I would have easily have replaced them with Armie Hammer for Call Me By Your Name, even Michael Stuhlbarg for Call Me By Your Name, or Colin Farrell, either in The Killing of a Sacred Deer or The Beguiled. So, to me, two lost opportunities there.
Yeah, almost verbatim what I would say. I have a problem with Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And it's interesting that, you know, through all the award season to date, there haven't been clear contenders. But in the last few weeks, it seems like Three Billboards and The Shape of Water have become the front runners in almost every category.
They totally gathered momentum.
So they've gathered a lot of momentum, those two movies. And I would not have picked maybe Shape of Water, but I would not have picked Three Billboards at all to gain that kind of momentum. So... not that Sam Rockwell is not good in this movie. He's very good in this movie. Yeah. Woody Harrelson is a great actor who needs to be celebrated. But in this movie, I don't know. I had a problem with his character. So I think the double nomination should have come from Call Me By Your Name for Armie Hammer and Michael Stuhlbarg. And like you, Rashmi, I think Michael Stuhlbarg and Colin Farrell have both been in three movies each this year. And they've done remarkable work. Where they have kind of given themselves completely to their roles. There's not a shred of vanity in either of their performances. It would have been good if they would have been nominated for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting how well Three Billboards has been received critically, given that the three of us, I think, didn't particularly love that movie. And I feel like they've played the Oscar game almost perfectly. They timed their release to really capitalize on the award season. So I think that we're seeing some of that strategy pay off here. Okay, so, I mean, do we want to pick our nominations? No, or no, let's just talk
we'll,
about
we'll
them.
Do that we'll closer do that. To the Oscars.
Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. All right. I think this is more about, like, surprises and what snubs, we would have, yeah, sure. What we would have put in.
So next category I have here is the Best Supporting Actress. And here we have Mary J. Blige in Mudbound, Allison Janney, I, Tonya, Leslie Manville for the Phantom Thread, Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird, and Octavia Spencer for The Shape of Water.
Go ahead, Yasti, you start.
So I think, gosh, since the very first prizes were given out starting in November last year, the two front runners have been Allison Janney in I, Tonya, and Laurie Metcalf in Lady Bird, and I don't begrudge either one of them. They're fine. You know, scary mom performances both. So I think I do consider them as the front runners. Octavia Spencer was, I mean, she's great. She always lifts up a movie, but I didn't think her work was that good here. I mean, she does a fine job, but not worthy of pointing out. Mary J. Blige, this is one of her major big roles. But in that movie, I mean, again, I don't begrudge her. She's fine in that film. But, you know, somebody like Carey Mulligan, I think, in the movie was as good, if not better than her, I would say. So there's a little bit of a media push to kind of nominate Mary J. Blige, which I'm okay with, but I would have hoped it would have been, because Carey Mulligan is not even in the discussion. And then the real surprise for me here is really Leslie Manville in Phantom Thread. It's a movie we saw recently. She's excellent in the movie. She's really good. But I think there has been a surge of affection for Phantom Thread. Suddenly it's pushed out in many categories, you know, front runners. And I think what Leslie Manville did is she kicked off Holly Hunter for The Big Sick.
I was going to say.
And that really troubles me. I think Holly Hunter is so good in The Big Sick. She's the heart of the movie. And I think she's a much more lived in real character than what Leslie Manville plays, who is a more stylized kind of thing. We haven't discussed the Phantom Thread, but so I would have liked Holly Hunter on this list for sure. That's my gripe.
So I agree with everything you said, Yazdi, except the Holly Hunter bit. So for me, I'm shocked that Bria Vanarte didn't make this for the Florida Project. To me, maybe the timing was off, but I really believe that Bria Vanarte from The Florida Project was snubbed here. And I agree with you.
Was she
absolutely
the mother character?
She was the mother character, yeah. Brilliant, brilliant performance. And again, I really feel like someone like Kirsten Dunst or Elle Fanning from The Beguiled would have been a really good addition to this group. I agree with you, Yazdi. I actually think Octavia Spencer's performance in the film last year,
Hidden Figures,
was way better than what she does here in The Shape of Water, which seems almost too supportive in a sense. And Mary J. Blige, I agree with you. I don't begrudge her getting nominated, but what was she doing wearing those weird aviator glasses in the, you know,
and those hats?
Yeah, in that era, it was just so strange to me. Great performance without the glasses. Joe,
anything to add?
No, I think I agree with everything you said here. I mean, I do think Octavia Spencer's performance is very disposable. I found the whole experience of The Shape of Water somewhat less meaningful than others have found it. So, yeah, again, the fact that the movie's really gotten this much wind behind it and it's overshadowed things that I think, you know, I would like to have maybe seen in its place as, you know, award-worthy.
Yeah, and we didn't discuss Mudbound as a movie. I think it was a good movie. I guess I described it to you, Joe, as one of those movies where had 12 Years a Slave not been absolutely blow your mind incredible 3 years ago, Mudbound, I think, would have been very impressive. Mm. I think any movie that's tackling that same type of material is going to have a very high bar to live up to. So Mudbound's not bad. There are some good performances in it. I think it's an interesting story. It's very relevant to what's going on in the world today. And it's set, you know, during the Civil War. And then the other one we didn't speak about also was I, Tonya, which was a very impressive movie. And we can cover that when we get to the best movies. But again, I agree with you, Yazdi. Jani, for me, was phenomenal. Best performance, best supporting performance of the year.
Okay, let's move on then to Best Actor. So the nominees are Timothy Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name, Daniel Day-Lewis for Phantom Thread, Daniel Kaluuya for Get Out, Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour, and Denzel Washington for Roman J. Israel, Esquire.
Okay, I'll start this one off. So I have a problem with Daniel Day-Lewis being in here. And we can talk about Phantom Thread when we talk about movies. Again, lost opportunities here for me are I will cry to my death because Hostiles got no love. Mm. And again, we can talk about Hostiles when we talk about Best Picture. But Christian Bale is, that's a loss for me. Christian Bale should absolutely be part of this group. And I also think, and I mentioned Colin Farrell when we were talking about Best Supporting, but again, I would have put him in for Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I look, Daniel Day-Lewis has 3 Oscars already. And I don't know this is supposedly his last movie before he's announced retirement. And it's, again, I felt we can talk more about Phantom Thread when we get to the movies part. But his performance is very stylized. It's kind of a fuss budget.
It's always stylized. I think that's the problem I have with Daniel Day-Lewis. It's him in costume.
He has an intensity, right?
And
some people read that as overacting. Others, you know, he's very known for being a method actor, and so he disappears into these characters, and I find him generally believable. But yeah, it was
very, very a very fussy performance. It felt like he was acting. I don't always feel like he's acting in other movies. It really felt like he was acting in this movie. So I don't know that, you know, I don't think any actor, male actor before, has gotten 4 Oscar wins. So I don't even think it's deserving of a nomination. But I do feel of all the categories, Best Actor actually is the weakest this year. And you can tell because, you know, Denzel Washington got in with Roman J. Israel Esquire. I know people love him, but for me.
Look, I'm going to disagree with you. I think it's a fine performance in a mediocre movie. And if it was not for his performance in that movie, the whole thing would have been a complete disaster.
That's true.
Right?
Whole thing is a complete disaster.
It is. I agree.
I think the movie has major problems. I'll give you that. But I feel like as an actor, he really gave something. He brought something to that character. And I feel like it's inferior to what he did with Fences last year.
Yes.
That's definitely, you know, if you look at the list of what he won for Training Day, you know, he was recognized for that. But yeah, it's odd here.
So episode 378 for our full review of Roman J. Israel.
But the big surprise here, if I may just kind of talk about that, I think is Daniel Kaluuya. That came from nowhere for me. I mean, as much as I admire the movie Get Out, and I really do, I'm a fan. You know,
we watched it again actually over the holiday period.
I buy very few movies a year at the moment, and I did go ahead and I purchased Get Out because it stayed with me for the entirety of the year. And I think when the San Diego Film Critics voted it as the best film of the year, it reawoke kind of my feelings about it. You know, liked it at the time, have grown to love it since, which is a very bizarre experience for me, because I tend to, you know, that tends not to happen so much. So, but I would never on this earth have considered Daniel Kaluuya as a best actor for his performance here. And I'm not trying to knock his performance. I think it's fine. But best actor to me represents somebody who brings something extra, right? Who brings that little je ne sais quoi to a role that elevates what the work that they do above perhaps the movie itself, above what everyone else is doing at the time. And here I felt he was well cast. Here I felt he did a really nice job. I'm not, again, not trying to pick on him. But best actor at the Academy Awards, I'm really surprised.
Listen, I mean, I think of all the movies that we are talking about, any of them, the one that people will be talking about 10 years from now is Get Out.
Of course, it's a remarkable film.
Nobody's going to be talking about any of these other films. It's really going to stand the test of time very well, I think. And it seems a little bit uncharitable to complain about Daniel Kaluuya because, you know, he does his part for the movie. But I agree, he doesn't stand up with the other actors in this category here. And I think most voters were very impressed by there's that, I don't know if it's a spoiler, but there's that scene in the movie where he's thinking and, you know, he can't move. And, you know, he's like crying because he's lost complete control of himself. Mm-hmm. And I think that really surprised and affected a lot of people. And I think that's where that nomination is coming from. But yeah, I have to agree.
I mean, I feel like, you know, Alison Williams would have deserved a spot on the best supporting if he got that, because she, for me, was... you know, the real solid, the star performance in that movie. You know,
or Catherine Keener for best supporting actor.
She was so good.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about Get Out when we talk about Best Picture. It is, I believe he's deserving of it because I think it's what, imagine.
Yeah, I remember you were very happy to see him.
Yeah, I was very happy to see him there. Because imagine now a Denzel Washington or a Jamie Foxx or a... any other African-American guy playing this role. I think it's easy to overplay the race issue here.
Right.
And the beautiful thing that Daniel Kaluuya does is it's a very understated performance. And I've come to appreciate the performance more when I've seen him now live talking about it. He's a British actor. Mm-hmm. And he's actually come from the same... programs such as Dev Patel from Skins. That's where he started and apparently gained a lot of notoriety for a program called Black Mirror that's actually streaming on Netflix.
It's excellent.
And everyone keeps saying it's absolutely excellent. Now, that came out actually in 2009. Mm. So he's been a long time in the making. I think we just haven't known a lot of him in the US.
Sure. Again.
So I think,
I don't mean to blast him.
Yeah. I'm happy he's here. And I'm glad that he's getting recognition.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely. Really well done for him for getting that. Just a surprise, a real surprise.
Yeah. I am sad that Christian Bale, I'll say it again.
Yeah.
Christian Bale not getting a nod for Hostiles is such a loss.
I feel about, like you feel about Christian Bale, I feel about Jake Gyllenhaal for Stronger. Hmm. I thought that was... You know, we've seen Gyllenhaal do amazing work year after year. And I think here he's playing a person who's not necessarily the smartest, you know, knife in the drawer. And you can really overdo this and make this a rah-rah, you know, disability person rising from disability movie. And it's not. It's all about what's in the brain. And I think, you know, he does such fine work here. And so I feel it a bit of a snub for him. Although Christian Bale in Hostiles was great. But the one thing I'm really overjoyed about is to see Timothy Chalamet because he's only 22 years old. And we all talked about what a great job he did in this film. Really understated until he just breaks your heart.
I think he's going to be the Meryl Streep of the future. I hope that.
Let's hope he lives up to his potential. Yeah. I mean, we see this a lot with young actors.
Well, but we've seen him in three movies now and three for three, he's been amazing.
Yeah.
Even though he's had bit parts in the other two.
And he was in the Chris Nolan movie Interstellar, so...
Oh,
that makes me a fan.
Okay.
All right, let's move on. Best actress, then. We have Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water, Frances McDormand for Three Billboards, Margot Robbie for I, Tonya, Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird, and Meryl Streep for The Post. So what are your thoughts on the best actress category?
This is, I think, the one category where I have the least number of gripes. I think these are all... good, sturdy, dependable, hard-earned performances. The one maybe sticking out a little bit is Margot Robbie, although she's completely playing against type in I, Tonya. But, you know, you compare her to somebody like Sally Hawkins or Frances McDormand, and it seems like slightly lesser input. But maybe it's just because we think so highly of Frances McDormand and we think so highly of Meryl Streep and so forth. So there's not one year that I think doesn't belong or that I would begrudge. I'm glad Saoirse Ronan is here for Lady Bird. She has won 3 Oscar nominations now before she's 22 or something.
Yeah, so she's remarkable.
She's remarkable. Atonement.
Brooklyn,
and now this one. I think only Jennifer Lawrence has won. Has done that at a slightly younger age than Saoirse Ronan. But
so I feel differently than Yazdi on this category. I'm disappointed. Okay, so disappointments for me are Rosamund Pike in Hostiles, which was a stunning performance. And way better than Sally Hawkins in The Shape of Water. I was, if you recall, in episode 379, I was rather annoyed by Sally Hawkins and her need to eat a sandwich. And I thought the performance was a little bit overplayed, and we saw a little bit too much of her in that movie.
Actress should be faulted for.
And I think, you know, Meryl Streep is always good, but did she bring anything more to the performance than someone like a Rosamund Pike or even Nicole Kidman in The Beguiled? So that's the one I keep going back to. But I agree with you. You know, these are all performances with heft. I loved Margot Robbie. I think Margot Robbie was incredible as Tonya Harding.
Yeah.
And if this wasn't a year where Frances McDormand had done that incredible performance, that was the one good thing about 3 Billboards, was Frances McDormand. I think if we didn't have that in the mix, then I would definitely be putting Margot Robbie above Saoirse Ronan.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, okay.
Joe?
Nothing really to add other than I'm really disappointed Jessica Chastain.
Oh, okay.
Hasn't made the list again. So the last year she was... she had a remarkable performance with Miss Sloan. I don't think that even picked up a nomination, which kind of bums me out because that was an actress at the very top of her game.
Yeah, Molly's Game and got Best Adapted Screenplay
this
here.
This year, Molly's Game, I think, you know, the movie itself was perhaps a little overcooked. It was, you know, it was just Sorkin-directed, Sorkin script, and it was a little too much Sorkin. As much as I kind of like Aaron Sorkin, I also find that his voice overshadows every single character in the screenplays. But Jessica Chastain was so good in it, and I feel, if nothing else, to recognize it for what she missed out on with Miss Sloan and this, I don't know why she's being overlooked.
I mean, I found the character to be quite similar between Miss Sloan and Molly's Game.
For sure.
Even in terms of the look. I liked Molly's Game. I didn't love it. Like you, Joe, I wish that someone else had directed the movie. I found it a little bit too much.
Yeah. Again, maybe it's a reflection of the fact that the movie isn't as well received.
And I think that's a general theme of 2017 is that, remember, we've said this time and time again, it was a year of pretty amazing performances in average movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jessica Chastain gets asked to do these roles because she's so good in them.
Brilliant.
She's so good, and I can't think of, like, a Carey Mulligan, I don't think she'd be able to pull it off, or, you know, even a Saoirse Ronan. Emma Stone. I mean, I think when you need, like, a strong character, you know, who doesn't seem... at the same time, doesn't seem cartoonish, you know. I mean, Jessica is vulnerable.
Yeah.
So she's so good. I almost worry that maybe she's a little too politically outspoken in Hollywood, and she's kind of paying the price for that. I hope that's not the case, but yeah, I think
something's going on, and she doesn't even make the snubs list, which is like really frustrating to me. Like, there are some, you know, there was a lot of, we didn't talk about it, but there was a lot of, you know, well, James Franco was snubbed, you know, for his performance in Disaster Artist, but. Like, Jessica Chastain doesn't even make the snubs list. Like, there's no one out there kind of fighting her case saying, why was she overlooked? So that's my little shout out to what I thought was a great performance.
Who would you replace here in this
Streep
list? Yeah.
simply, I mean, I know that the performance of Streep in the Post was very good and I can't knock it. I've seen her do better work and no, that's just how I feel about the Post.
Yeah.
So.
And Jessica Chastain also did The Zookeeper's Wife earlier, very early in 2017.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are tired. Everybody's tired of Meryl Streep, but she keeps getting nominated because, you know, she does good work. I mean, I liked her performance in The Post because she does not play a strong, independent woman with agency. She plays a very tentative person who kind of learns. Mm-hmm. And I think her choices were very good and they were very believable. So
she has great instincts. Yeah. But we all know that because she's Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Okay. Then let's move on then to Best Director. Mm-hmm. So we have Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk. Yay. We have Jordan.
Isn't this just the Christopher Nolan category, Joe?
Christopher Nolan and four other people.
Yeah. And some others.
That's pretty much the way that I see the world. But, yeah. For the rest of us, we also have Jordan Peele for Get Out, mm-hmm. Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, Paul Thomas Anderson for Phantom Thread, and Guillermo del Toro for The Shape of Water.
Do you want to start this one, Josie? It's probably your favorite category.
There's not a lot to say. I mean, I know which one is my favorite of those, but...
Thomas Anderson.
it's a pretty good list, I think. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Martin McDonagh being overlooked for Three Billboards, but I'm kind of okay with that. I'm surprised and delighted for Greta Gerwig, although I must admit that Lady Bird, to me, while it was a very good Noah Baumbach-style movie, failed to resonate with me as it seems to have lit the rest of the world on fire. So it's not to say that there was nothing to dislike about Lady Bird. It's a brilliant coming of age, you know, teenage girl movie. But I just felt that if it was released in May, like these movies tend to be, then it would have come and gone and nobody would be talking about it now. But, you know, good to her. I really root for her. Greta Gerwig is one of my favorite Hollywood personalities. I love the acting persona that she has, and I like the little bits of the real life Greta Gerwig that we've been exposed to in the world. So, you know, I love her to bits, but I just Best Director for this. Wow, you know,
and directorial debut.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine piece
first
of work.
Independent, yeah. She's co-directed before, but
correct.
Yeah, first,
it's a fine piece of work. Nothing to knock it. Just I feel like there's.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp as Joe. Look, I loved Lady Bird, and actually that was episode number 375 for us. Yazdi and I gushed and gushed and gushed about it. It was like our own little Greta had done great work, and we were proud of her. And I still feel like that.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, Joe. I don't think it's the second coming. I think it's the one movie of the year, like Get Out, that has wormed its way into people's hearts and has got us emotively. And so for a year with average movies, it's the one that created, like Get Out, a lot of emotion. So I think that's why it kind of stuck with us. For me, Scott Cooper for Hostiles. I'll keep saying it. And also Yorgos Lanthimos for The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Big misses for me.
Yes.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I said this when we first, when we first talked about Dunkirk, which was released in March last year, I think, that this is the movie that he should be nominated for. And I'm glad to see him. I mean, the movie is him.
Chris
and
Nolan, we're talking about.
Who did I say? Yeah,
no,
Chris,
you did.
What did I say?
You just said he.
He, yeah, Chris Nolan, that he should be nominated.
He shall not be named.
And I think, you know, everything that he has kind of used before, maybe overused a little bit, he puts it to perfect use here. You know, the time dilation, you know, the use of sound editing, the craft, you know, it's just on a difficulty level, I think his probably was the most difficult of all of these. It's just such a big movie in scope and in terms of, you know, what it's trying to do. So I, you know, I'm as much as he annoys the hell out of me usually. I really have to say, God, did he deserve this one? And I'm so glad he's nominated, because for long, he's been nominated as producer for many of his movies, but never as a director. So I'm really glad to see him recognized. Jordan Peele is another one. I mean, Get Out is him, and he takes a movie which can be seen as a straight out action horror thriller movie and just, you know, has so much commentary built in. You could do a thesis on
phenomenal.
It.
Phenomenal.
And it's incredible that he makes you feel what it might be like as an African-American in a Caucasian world through the exaggerated scenario within this movie. And that in itself is just genius. So I love him for that. Greta Gerwig, like you, Rashmi, you know, I always felt that it's a shame that Hollywood doesn't recognize what a fine writer she is. Remember, she's written...
Yes. You said that for many years, yeah.
For many years, and you know, nobody was hiring her. So what did she do? She said, screw big Hollywood, and she wrote her own script. She directed it, and she's in her 20s. And, you know, we have to realize in the current climate, I hate to sound political, but a young female director getting nominated is a big deal. I agree, maybe in scope, the movie is not as big as... you know, as grand as Dunkirk or Phantom Thread or Get Out. But it gets to your heart, and it's her. The whole movie's her. It's her personal story. She's written it. She's directed it. It's her baby. So I'm glad she's recognized. The one who doesn't belong here, I think, is Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yes, I agree.
I just, you know, I liked his early movies, but off late, from Master on, from The Master and Inherent Vice and now Phantom Thread. We'll talk more about it, but I don't think he belongs there.
So let's go there. We're getting to the big category. So I think...
Can I just say one other thing?
Go.
I would have really liked Luca Guadagnino to get nominated for Call Me By Your Name.
Thank you.
So I think he, you know, we all talked about what a great job
I would give up Yorgos Lanthimos for a Luca Guadagnino.
I
also...
just before we go on, I took a photograph of Joe's face as Yazdi was gushing about
Christopher Nolan,
because Joe, your face was like a proud papa.
Oh.
My God, you were like beaming.
Well, we haven't talked about it on the podcast, but I've already given Yazdi a piece of my mind over the fact that in his top 10 movies of 2017, he listed Dunkirk as number 11.
Oh.
11.
No, it was of my top 15 movies of 2017.
Oh, okay.
It's number 11.
God, I'm glad I haven't put my list in then. It's not even in my 20.
11, Yazdi. I felt that was a...
Yeah, but Joe, that's because your top five is Chris Nolan, Dunkirk.
I felt that was a personal insult that he did directly. That
I'm going to move it up just for you, Joe.
Sitting outside of his top 10 movies, and the one time that it deserves to be at the top of the list, he puts it at number 11. I'm kidding.
Yes.
No. Oh my.
Before we move away from Best Director altogether, I mean, I think there was a couple of other ones that I think had a little bit of an outside chance of being here, but you know, I get why they're not. Patty Jenkins for Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I think she did a remarkable job of directing that movie.
Yes.
And I think the material itself was not as strong as the direction. I think the material itself was good enough, adequate comic book fare, but I think, you know, in terms of a movie that affected me and has remained very high up on my list of movies of the year, I think she could have maybe been given a shout there, although I think that was always unlikely to happen. The other outsider
for
me...
I can't imagine any Marvel movie making it to a Best Director.
Right. Yeah, no, if The Dark Knight didn't, then, you know, this one
Correct.
Wasn't going to. But I feel like The Dark Knight made a statement, and we've moved beyond that, but clearly we haven't. The other one here the other one is a little bit more controversial, but I think in terms of achievement in directing, I'd have loved to have seen Aronofsky here for Mother. Mother, as controversial as that movie is, has lodged itself firmly within my psyche, and I think in terms of what a director has to do to get a movie made and then to take this fever dream of a situation that he had in terms of script that he wrote and put it on screen in a way that we can also experience that fever dream. It's not a best film. I wouldn't put it on the best film list. But in terms of achievement in directing, wow.
Yeah.
I know. And as an outsider, I know it was never going to happen. But I loved what he did with that material.
I will say, what an interesting viewpoint, and quickly move on and say, you know, a lot of people have said that Spielberg was snubbed for The Post.
Interesting, yeah, okay.
So I've been reading a lot about this, and apparently, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, he was nominated for Schindler's List, and he was nominated for Jaws.
E.T., all kinds of
stuff. Yeah, he's done a lot of great stuff, and he's kind of like the one that Hollywood likes to hate on.
Color Purple, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think The Post is very, you know, we said this, it's a good, solid movie. We talked about that in episode 379. It's a good, solid movie, but I don't think it's his best work.
No.
Yeah, I just love where he's taken his career off. Yeah, late,
but I would easily, again, I would replace Paul Thomas Anderson with Spielberg.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Phantom Thread, because I think we're all feeling about the same way about it.
No, I liked it more than you guys, by the sound of it.
Oh, okay. And so Thomas Anderson, Phantom Thread, about a... I couldn't tell if it was based on a real... based on, you know, some form of reality, but it's a fictional story about a designer called Reynolds Woodcock, who basically that didn't make me laugh because it's a very British name.
Woodcock?
Yeah.
Okay.
I never thought about it that way, Yasley. Now that's going to make me giggle every time we say it.
Lord knows what he's going to think of the name Babcock.
And stars Daniel Day-Lewis and Leslie Manville as his sister. And I'm desperately trying to remember.
Vicky Creeps,
who Cripes, plays like Cripes. a young muse.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was a very curious movie about very curious people and a very curious situation. And I made it right to the end. And then I was like, what the?
Yeah.
Like, WTF.
Oh, no, I like this one a lot.
So it had elements of Mother to me in here a little bit.
I generally struggle with Paul Thomas Anderson. He tends to rub me up the wrong way. And even a movie that I admire very much, like There Will Be Blood, you know, it's in our collection. I admire it, but I never seem to connect with it. And for some reason, this movie really, really... worked well for me. It really did. I think,
but it's about fashion.
It is, but it wasn't about that for me. I think it was a character study, and it's a character study of a slightly exaggerated personality. But it's the way that the movie elevates these idiosyncrasies into a way that we can somehow relate. It felt almost Coen Brothers-esque in a way to me, in that these very odd behaviors, these little tics that this character has, are presented to us in a way that we completely understand it. And maybe it's you know, a personal thing. You know, the character's intolerance of noise is something that I can perhaps relate to.
We were talking about Joe and Town Mouse.
Well, you know, the Country Mouse came out in me, because I felt. You know, I've known people like that. My mother was
looking
married
in the mirror
to one of them, and that the whole thing just worked really well for me, which is interesting, because I as a director, things like The Master are insufferable. I mean, I what was the last movie he made?
Inherent Vice,
which I didn't even think I watched.
Yeah, also just we both watched it.
Oh, we did. Yes, I forgot about it.
I slept through it.
You
did indeed. Yeah. So, as a director, he's very much more miss than hit for me, but this one really, really, really worked for me.
I'm dying to hear what you think.
It's an odd movie. I mean, I rushed out to watch it because it came out of nowhere, and it, you know, got these big nominations. I mean, nobody was expecting it to win Best Director or Best Supporting Actor or Best Actor.
And it's coming right at the end. I mean, I remember there was one screening before we voted. And
right. We didn't get to see
it. I don't think any of the critics' societies have voted it.
Right. And nobody kind of recognized it as a major player. And then suddenly it seems like the Academy members have kind of, you know, really warmed up to the movie. So I was eager to watch it. And I appreciate what he's doing because it's a very precise movie. There is nothing
right.
sloppy or slovenly about it.
Costume's beautiful. Oh, costume's production is lovely.
It's a very deliberate movie. All of his movies are very deliberate. There is nothing that seems to have been done on the fly or improvised. And it's very precise. I had two big problems with it. One is the character played by Daniel Day-Lewis was just hurtfully cruel through the whole movie. And I think it was kind of, you know, we've seen this again and again, that, you know, just because he's a genius with what he does, it kind of allows him to treat everybody around him so poorly. So, I mean, I don't want to judge his character, but I couldn't warm up to him because he was just such an... I never felt...
Pompous.
He was not just pompous. I didn't feel he was deserving of the audience's sympathy, and that's where the problem lies. Maybe I couldn't see him as just misunderstood. I thought that a lot of the problems he was having in life were of his own reckoning. But then the other thing which bothers me the most about the movie, but also tickles me a little bit, is that you can't sit in your cinema seat and you can't watch the first half of the movie having the slightest clue where it's headed towards at the end. And where it heads towards at the end, that third act, just, or even the last half an hour, came out of nowhere. And it's so, I don't want to say anything about it because it's such a spoiler, but it was so unexpected. And I didn't know if that's how he... Did he always intend to get there, or he was looking for a fun or an interesting way
exactly,
to end the movie?
Exactly.
And he kind of brought that in.
Because yeah. I was with it until that point. Right. And then I thought...
Wait a minute.
Yeah, that's yeah. weird. We went into mother territory for me in yeah, that I mean, sense,
it,
you know.
I mean, it, yeah. I mean,
like
it
Crazy Town.
To,
it went right, a little bit Crazy Town.
Yeah. So I don't understand the adoration. This is not a movie that you can love, I think. This is a movie that you can admire a
yes.
lot.
Yes.
Because there's, you know, like, anyway, I mean, the craft and, you know, the precision with which everything is done and the costumes and the details.
And the score.
And the score.
Oh, the score was stunning.
The
all score the way through, yeah.
It's excellent. And, you know, so all of that is so well realized. I can see rooting for that, but I don't see anybody kind of loving this movie for the warmth it gives you. It doesn't give you any warmth. It gives you a lot of chills.
Right. I just found the whole thing very, very curious.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand the point of it. I didn't see the character arc in a sense. And I just found there was this whole section of GoPros on the vehicle. Like whenever they were in a vehicle.
That felt
there
very
was kind
Wes
of
Anderson
like a,
to me.
Yeah, it was too gimmicky for me. For a movie that's so classic and beautiful.
There were GoPros?
No,
yeah,
no, no.
There was like that
yeah,
sort
see, when
of like...
They, when they're driving around town,
yeah.
the camera angle sat right on
inside
top of the car.
Inside them, almost like a...
Oh, I see
and
what
then
you mean.
When they're driving, when he's driving out in the country.
Right, right.
That just felt very,
was,
very Wes Anderson
yeah,
to me. Like very fussy.
Yeah, it's
very
fussy. Yeah.
And it was,
yeah.
you know,
I felt very fussy, like fussed with afterwards.
Yeah.
But it didn't make me laugh. It was highly comical for me. And actually, we went to a showing where there weren't many people. And I think Joe and I were probably one of the only ones laughing quite a lot all the way through.
Yeah,
maybe
I
that's
think
because
we were
you're
annoying
a lot
people, but...
strange like that man sometimes.
I mean, there's a lot
Joe
of
has
humor.
Some of those idiosyncrasies.
I think that's why I related to the character.
Yes.
No, there's a lot of humor in the movie.
A lot.
There's a movie on Netflix right now called The Duke of Burgundy. Which was released last year. Did you watch it?
No, but I want to. It was on my list. It's on my list.
It reminded me a lot of that in terms
okay.
of how it plays out at the end.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into
the final
stretch here with the Best Picture nomination. So we have Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards. So in a year where we're allowed to have as many nominations as we... Well, I think we could have had, I think, at least another nomination.
We could have had one more.
Again, I'm going to express my utter disappointment that something like Wonder Woman doesn't make it onto that list. Mm-hmm. I also feel like a movie like Coco, which I think was terrific, is nominated on the Best Animation, but will animations ever be elevated to that? Status of being...
well, if Get Out's here this year, you never know.
And My Life as a Zucchini, which I believe was nominated last year, but was definitely released here, at least in the US, this year.
I think so far the only animated movie to get nominated for Best Picture has been Beauty and the Beast. And so, yeah, it's a shame that, you know, finer films don't kind of make it in. Because yeah. I don't think it's any less a piece of work than any
Not
of these.
At all, yeah.
So I think it would have been, again, I'll put my final vote for in for Hostiles. Mm-hmm. And Yazdi, I'm interested to hear what you think because you hadn't seen it when we did mm-hmm. the podcast itself. I'm sad Florida Project didn't make it here.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah,
I
mean, I'm
it
sad.
It wouldn't have made my top list, but it was extraordinarily well received, and I'm surprised.
Yeah,
that
and the Sean only Baker love it got for, was Willem Dafoe for best director as well. And then the other one I thought would have been quite brave to put on the list was It. Yeah. Remember how we all felt after It? And yeah. to me, that was either best adapted screenplay or best ensemble. And it was really well directed. I think it was directed by Andy I can never say his name. Muschietti. Even like yeah, yeah. Andy M. I think he did a fine job.
Yeah.
I think there's a problem in that.
And The Beguiled, sorry.
The Beguiled, absolutely, The Beguiled. Or even Killing of a Sacred Deer, but that's too
Keddy.
Unpleasant for everybody.
Although Nocturnal Animals did make it, and that was
that's true.
Also yeah. pretty unpleasant in parts. But
I think, you know, people rightfully complain that, you know, the Oscar nominations are not connected. They've lost touch with the common man. And I think when you have a nomination list like this, then that kind of furthers that. I think of all the movies on the list, the person in Peoria, you know, is probably only likely to have watched maybe Dunkirk and Get Out. Those are the only two movies. And so therefore, I think absolutely something like Wonder Woman or It, you know, would have been a good yeah. thing to, because those were critically well received. You know, those were commercial successes. And, you know, they had a lot going against them. Both of those movies, they could have just kind of succumbed to, you know, the genre.
It could have been crap, know. And it was so anticipated.
So it would have been good
and
to
it was
do that.
So good.
Yeah. Again, I don't think Phantom Thread belongs there.
But, I agree.
But or Three Billboards for that matter. But I, you know, Three Billboards and Shape of Water are just like completely ahead of everybody else at right now, it seems. But of the others, maybe I'm not that keen about Darkest Hour. I felt pretty strongly about it after I'd watched it, but then my love or my respect for the movie has kind of waned. It's kind of faded away a little bit.
I think it's epically magnificent, but it's not the best movie of the year.
Yeah, yeah. Does it deserve a spot though in Best Picture?
No, I mean I agree with the Best Actor. Yes, nomination definitely. For Gary Oldman, but I don't think it belongs here.
Yeah, that's true. And I was just sorry, I was listening to you, but I was also trying to look at the timing of these releases here. Mm-hmm. Of the list, all but two, I believe, were released in the fourth quarter.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And then, by my estimate, I don't have the exact dates in front of me, but in terms of wide releases, five out of the nine were December.
Yeah.
Releases, yeah. Which, again, we talk about this a lot. I'm not going to climb upon the old soapbox one more time because I think I've done that several times this year. But timing is everything.
Yeah.
And that's really too bad. You made a really good point, Yazdi, about these movies not being seen by many people. But I really think that a lot of that is these movies weren't available to be seen by mm-hmm. people until very, very late in the year.
Even January, some of them.
You know, again, I understand the commercial strategy behind that, but it's you know, it's become a little bit of a game over the last decade or so to really nail the timing of this stuff. And you know, Darkest Hour, you're right, it's so unremarkable as a movie.
Yeah.
That I didn't even notice it on this list, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, I guess there's been a lot of talk about The Big Sick not making the list.
Yeah,
That's no love lost for me.
No, I mean, I think that there have been movies that have embraced that topic and have been done better. And I like that it's, you know, a director from you know, the Muslim community that's you know, doing that, a Pakistani director or Pakistani American
writer,
but as a movie, it didn't move, you know, didn't shake the earth for me.
Yeah, and I'm happy that Get Out, again, a movie which was released in, you know, very small movie with almost no name actors, released very early in the movie, early in the year, had enough defenders and enough supporters that it kind of pulled through in major categories come year end.
I think it's just one of those that will stay, like you said, it will stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. And again, when I was as thrilled watching it a second time, because I was kind of worried that maybe I'd built it up in my head. But when we watched it the second time, I just kept saying, this is so good. And I noticed a few things that I hadn't noticed before. It's a great movie. Yeah. It does deserve the recognition it's getting.
And I think that's the story of the year when it comes to these nominations, that a movie like that at all gets nominated. But a movie like that, that came out early in the year, gets nominated. And that a movie like that, that came out early in the year by a first-time director is nominated. I mean, there's a lot of...
Episode 350, that long ago. And I remember us, all of us being blown away by it.
No, it is. It's a remarkable thing. And you know, movie of the year, you're right, Yazdi. I mean, as I look down that list, Dunkirk is obviously going to be a personal favorite for me, but I get that not everyone will feel that way. But Get Out really is
and I think it was a San Diego film. I think it's of our time.
The Zeitgeist.
Yeah, it's definitely.
It was, because I think it
says... And San Diego film critics chose that as the movie of the year.
Correct.
Which, again, you know, great choice by you guys.
Yeah. 2 months ago.
I'm kind of concerned that The Shape of Water is going to come in and drown everything else out. Again, I think timing-wise, it's a beautiful movie, but... had that been released in February, I don't know that we would be talking about it. Del Toro's last movie, Crimson Peak, has had far more impact on me than something like Shape of Water.
Yeah.
And we would never be talking about Crimson Peak on this list. So.
Yeah. And I also feel the same about I, Tonya. In some sense, I think if I, Tonya had maybe come... maybe a little bit earlier and just had a bit of time for us to digest it, I think we'd be saying a lot more about it. It's a really interesting story.
It needed to be a better movie. I mean, the memorable thing about I, Tonya is Margot Robbie and Allison Janney.
The only other thing I forgot to mention was when we were talking about Best Actress, I think I'm completely in the minority here, but
Gal Gadot
definitely, for sure. But I was actually thinking along those lines, actually, Charlize Theron in Atomic Blonde. I thought she was so good there, and you know, she was kicking ass, and she was
a good movie, unfortunately.
Rashmi,
we didn't review Atomic Blonde. I didn't love the movie. I thought it was a bit of a crappy movie.
No.
Yazdi, I'm not with you on this, and I like that kind of fodder. But to me, it would be like nominating Keanu Reeves for John Wick. I mean, they're
There's nothing wrong with that, by the way.
Where is
Keanu's boat going to come in?
Yeah.
Well, he's not, yeah.
It's just not best actor.
The boat has broken.
but she did get a nomination for Fury Road, right?
Fury Road, yeah. She got nominated. But I think I love that movie, and I think the movie's all her, and, you know, it's a brutal, like, you know, black and blue face, you know, bloody knuckled movie. And, you know, she just goes all in.
I just admired her ability. I was doing a lot of travel when it came out. I think I watched a screening or a download of it. And I remember I was doing a lot of travel. And I just kept marveling at her ability to come out in amazing costumes, amazing outfits in airport toilets.
That's right. One that I forgot to mention, but I have seen Dunkirk more than once this year, and the Mark Rylance performance to me is extraordinary. There's very little said by him as an actor, but every single syllable that he utters, I find entirely believable. And in some ways, it's one of the most subtle and nuanced performances of the year, and you know, not just because it's in a Chris Nolan movie, but it really stuck in my mind when I watched the movie for the first time. And every time I watched the movie, since then,
every time I switched on the TV, Dunkirk was on. there was about a week period over the holiday.
I have a reason for that.
We'll listen to Joseph's excuse in a minute, but. Every time I turn the TV on, no matter what time of day I turned it on, and recall, Joe doesn't generally watch TV, Dunkirk was on.
Well, the reason for that is when you buy the Dunkirk DVD, you get a copy of the disc on Blu-ray. You get a copy of the disc on 4K Blu-ray. You get a copy of the disc on DVD.
But it's the same movie, and so Joe watched every format.
And you get a digital download, and I happen to be doing a survey of the different...
That's what you were doing.
Obsessed.
The other person I would have liked to see nominated for Best Supporting Actor Male is Barry Keoghan from Killing of a Sacred Deer. He was
phenomenal.
Yeah, that movie really relies a lot on him, and he was so good in that movie.
He gets my vote too because he fell down the stairs in Dunkirk on a boat.
He's in Dunkirk as well. Yes. Notice Phantom how everything Thread. Comes to
I was going to say Phantom Thread is much Dunkirk. More my life, Yazdi, yes, than people realize. Without well, make the sure there's clothing.
No, or the mushrooms. Yeah. Make sure there are no mushrooms.
Right, I know.
They were in our meal today, by the way.
Oh, dear.
It's okay. I like it.
Oh, very nice.
Well, that's a nice note to end on.
Phantom Thread. Spoiler.
Yes.
Well, let us know what you think. Facebook.com/MovieWallahs, Twitter.com/MovieWallahs, Instagram.com/MovieWallahs. What do you think of the Academy Award nominations this year? What would you think will win? It's certainly an interesting list. I'm not entirely disappointed by it, but you know, again, I feel like the game has been played to great effect by many of these movies, and you know, I guess I don't expect much to change.
And as we speak, the next round of movies has already started for 2018 with Sundance just finished.
Yes.
And I guess the one that I'm looking forward to from there is one called Hereditary, which is a horror movie, apparently of epic scale with Toni Collette.
Oh, wow.
Which sounds very interesting to me.
Yes.
Terrific stuff.
So, yeah, there's lots of movies which are already getting a lot of buzz out of Sundance. So,
yeah.
Hopefully it'll be a good year.
Yeah. Again, I don't think it was a bad year. I just think the performances were better. There were things in each movie that were better than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
Like the parts weren't as good as the total.
Yep.
Yeah.
Parts were better than the total. It's getting late.
It is getting late. And I'm going to make one more mention of Wind River and Jeremy Renner. That I should have talked about, but...
Nowhere. Not a single nomination.
Not on anybody's list other than probably my top 10, which I haven't yet compiled, but that will be high up on there. Yeah. So.
Coco, we mentioned...
Throughout Denzel Washington.
Was great. Square under foreign language film was great. I'm excited by that.
All right.
Yep.
Let's talk about those as in an upcoming podcast. Yep. Let's wrap up for today. So again, too many movies, too little time.
Hopefully you have a long journey that you can listen to this podcast on.
All 1 hour and 15 minutes of it.
Wow.
That may be a record.
Yes.
So what to talk about.
Indeed. All right. Too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.